Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Dick Hamilton. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and welcome to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Dick Hamilton, and I'll be the moderator for this call. The call is being recorded, and within 48 hours, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WSCE site. You may share this with others and replay at your convenience. If you've not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. An e-meeting URL is available to you from the WSCE site. If you're unable to access the e-meeting, you may access the PDF file for this presentation from the WSCE site or go to ibm.com and in the search box at the very top of the page, type 7006999 and search. Let me repeat that, 7006999. That contains the PDF file for this presentation. If you encounter technical difficulties during this WSTE session, you may instant message our co-moderator, Scotty Thomason, by clicking on Scotty T at us.ibm.com in the e-meeting attendee list, and he'll help you. Today's presenter is Greg Bowman. Greg is an advisory software engineer. He joined IBM in 1987 as a customer support rep for CICS. Greg transferred to the MQ Series support team in 1996. He's provided for MQ Series on all platforms, and his current assignment is in support of WebSphere MQ on distributed platforms. Greg's team also supports MQ Series Link for R3. Today's topic, Introduction to MQ Series Link for R3, will include a PowerPoint presentation followed by a question and answer session. During the presentation, all lines are going to be muted. After the presentation, the lines will be open for a question and answer session. If you're in the e-meeting, you'll see the presentation at this, and at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Greg Bowman.
Thank you. I'd like to first thank everyone for taking a little time out of their busy schedules to join us. I am Greg Bowman, and I will be leading you through this introduction to MQ Series Link for R3. I will try to remember to mention the page number as we go through this in case anyone loses their same time connection. They should be able to keep up by following along on the PDF files as well. The pages should match up the same. So without any further ado, we'll go ahead and jump right into this introduction for MQ Series Link for R3. So we'll begin on page 2. I'll start by just telling you MQ Series Link for R3 is an interface between WebSphere MQ, or MQ Series as it was known at the time the product was first released, and SAP R3. You'll hear me refer to this informally within this presentation as MQ Link. You may also hear people refer to it as SAP Link or R3 Link. These are all names for the same product, just referred to in different ways. Now, in this discussion today, we're going to cover the main functional components of MQ Link. I will go into how to begin to troubleshoot problems in case they occur in the MQ Link product, and we will not get into specifics of setup of either the MQ side or the R3 Link side. That would be more than we're going to go into for today's discussion. I will say that the troubleshooting section is enough to get you started in case you have a problem, but if you come to that position where you need assistance, the best thing to do would be to open a problem record with our support team, and we'll be glad to work with you on that. We'll go ahead now to page 3, the agenda for today. What is MQ Link for R3? We'll get into the different components there and discuss what exactly they do. Then we'll go and try to tie it all together and show how it fits with MQ Series and SAP R3 Link. And then once we have a good picture of what the product is, we'll go into how do you gather things such as traces, or where do I look for error messages, so that if there is a problem, you know where to start looking to gather the information to determine why. Go to page 4. This is just the page that lists out the different platforms on which the MQ Link for R3 runs. I'm not going to list all of them here. You can see for yourself. If you have other platforms that you'd like to see this product on, you can submit a requirement to our development team, and they'll be happy to consider it. But for the time being, these are the only platforms where the product now currently runs. On to page 5. We'll now get into what is MQLink for R3. Really, MQLink is just a set of application programs as far as MQ Series is concerned. These application programs are going to make MQ calls to get input messages off of MQ queues. When you install the MQLink product, part of the setup will have you define some queues within MQ Series to hold messages that will represent your data to both MQ Series and SAP R3. There is a sample configuration file which comes with the product which lets you define those. If you wanted to change the names, you could go in and just make modifications to that file, or you can define them just as you would any other queue, because these are simply plain local MQ queues. There's also a set of parameters within the INI files, which we will touch on a little bit later, which allow you to define the interface with R3. Now, the MQLink product itself interfaces with SAP R3 via RFC calls. RFC is a way that applications can make connection calls into the SAP R3 product. They are done from within the MQLink program in order to allow MQLink to communicate with SAP R3. So an application that wants to send a message from outside of SAP can use MQ Series and MQLink to make that connection. The application would build his message in the form of an MQ message. The data of that message would be made up of IDOCs, which are the form of data which SAP R3 understands. Your application could put a message onto a queue. The MQLink program would take it off that queue, transform it into the IDOCs, which SAP R3 understands, and pass them into the SAP R3 product. Conversely, if you had IDOCs within SAP R3, and you wanted to pass them into an application outside of there, you could have it, SAP R3, send its IDOCs to the MQLink program, which would then transform them into an MQ message, place it on an MQ queue, and your application could get it just by doing an MQ get call to that MQ queue. Now, one thing that we need to discuss here is the components that make up the MQLink server, and I'm sorry, I'm on page 6 now, are from a viewpoint of messages coming into SAP R3 or messages going out from SAP R3. One of the main components that makes up the MQLink product is the inbound server component. This inbound server is the program which passes messages from MQ into SAP R3. Now, this, as I described briefly on the previous foil, the MQLink program is just going to take these messages from an MQ queue. It's going to break them down into the form of an IDOC or a batch of IDOCs, and then send those IDOCs into the R3 program. The IDOCs being the format of messages that the R3 system understands. Now, the inbound server process is named SMQSI. This is also the command that you would use to start the inbound server. So if you were to look in a process list or a task list and you wanted to know whether this inbound server is running, you could look for SMQSI. If you see it there, it's an indication that that process is running. Now, the inbound server has a set of initialization or configuration parameters that it needs to use when it starts up. When the SMQSI program starts, it needs to know which queue manager to connect to, for example, or which MQQ to look at to retrieve his messages in order to send them to the SAP system. Those parameters are specified in your IN.INI file, your initialization file. And if you go on to page 7, I give an example there of the command that you would use to start the inbound server. It would be smqsi-i and then the path to where you have that IN.INI file stored. The parameters within this IN.INI file, we're not going to go into all of those today. They're well documented in the MQ link for R3 user's guide. I have a reference at the end of the presentation of where you can find that document online in case you don't have it already. But the IN.INI file is going to include things like the queue manager name that you're going to connect to or the queue names that the inbound server process is going to use to put and get messages from and to. You can specify all these parameters in the IN.INI file, or we will allow you to specify parameters on the command line. So if you wanted to specify a queue manager name on the command line, for example, you could have smqsi-i pass to the INI file and then your queue manager name, for example. Anything you specify on the command line is going to take precedence over what you have in the IN.INI file. But as a bare minimum, all you really need to do to kick off the inbound server is smqsi-i and a path to the INI file. If you move on to the next page, we're on page 8 now. This is just listing some of the examples of items that you'll find in that inbound INI file. Some of the parameters there are a transaction queue. When you establish communication with RFC, it gives you a transaction ID. That transaction ID is stored by the inbound server in this transaction queue. I'm not really going to get into the details of how it's used. Just for the purpose of this presentation, I just put it here as an example of one of the things that is in this inbound file. Another parameter is the bad message queue. I will get into a little more detail about this bad message queue later on and how it's used, because it has some good problem determination information there if you need to look at that. So we'll go into that in a little more detail later on in the presentation, but that's one of the parameters that can be specified in that INI file. Another is the inbound queue. This is the queue that the inbound server looks to take the messages that it will then convert into IDOCs. The default name, for example, that inbound queue is going to be SMQ_inbound_queue. Most of the default objects you'll find start with SMQ. It's a common name, or common naming convention that we use to identify those default objects, and those are all defined by default in that setup initialization file for you if you just use the default one that's supplied. If we move on now to page 9, the outbound server, very similar to the inbound server, it's just going in the opposite direction. This is the MQ Link program which receives IDOCs from the R3 link or from the SAP R3 program. It will take either one IDOC or a batch of IDOCs from the R3, and then it's going to transform those IDOCs into an MQ message. And then this message is going to be placed on an MQ queue. The process name and the command that you use to start the outbound server is SMQSO. So again, if you look in a process list, you would see SMQSO out there if the outbound server is running. Similar to SMQSI, or the inbound server, this also has an out.ini file. Now, one thing that's different here is the out.ini file is not a required parameter to start SMQSO. And I'll get into why here in just a second, but the SMQSO command by itself is enough to start the outbound server process. If we move on now to page 10, that out.ini file is, again, the initialization file for the outbound server, and it's going to include things similar to what we talked about for the inbound initialization file. It's going to have things such as your queue manager name and queue names that the outbound server can place messages onto. And again, any parameters that you specify on a command line are going to take precedence over that parameter that you use as your default parameter, if you will, in the out.ini file. If you move on now to page 11, here's an example of some of the outbound INI parameters. Again, you have a transaction queue that's used to store that transaction ID that is assigned by R3 when the communication is established. Now, another thing that we have for the outbound server is a SMQ DESTCONF file. This is a destination configuration file. And this is a reason that you don't necessarily have to use your outbound INI file. The SMQ DESTCONF file has similar parameters in there. And what it's used for is when you have an IDOC or a batch of IDOCs that come from the R3 system into the MQLink program, into the outbound server, you can set it up so that the IDOCs go to different destinations, go to different MQQs based on the header information in that IDOC. And the way you set that up is a set of parameters in the SMQ DESTCONF file. So if you wanted one set of IDOCs to go to one queue and have an application monitoring that queue, another set of IDOCs go to a different queue, you would set that up in your SMQ DESTCONF file, and then it would be used to route those IDOCs into different destinations. We move on now to page 12. We've covered the main components now, and what I'm going to do now is touch briefly on the message formats of what these messages look like when they're on one of these queues that are MQ series queues that I have mentioned quite a few times. If you're at all familiar with MQ series messages, you'll know that they start with a message descriptor or a header, and then they have message data. So in terms of MQ series perspective, this message format is laid out where you have a header, which is your MQMD, that's going to have the same information you see in any other MQ message. It'll have a format, it'll have information on CCS IDs, encoding values, everything that you would see in a message placed by any other application on an MQQ, you're going to see in that header. Now, the message data which follows is going to be specific to a message for one of these SAP link messages. The link header is information which is specific to one of these MQ link messages, and it's laid out in more detail within the MQ link R3 users guide. The link header information is going to have more details that identify it to the MQ link program so that he knows where to route the message, so that he knows whether to send it to a certain, like if it's the inbound server, whether to send it to a certain server in R3. And this type of information is taken from those INI files that we've been talking about. Now, the application data portion of the message format is where you actually have your IDOCs. And those are going to be in the IDOC format that is specified by R3 link. Now, the MQ link user's guide breaks that down into a little bit more detail, and it gives you more examples of what the data is going to look like. Now, I will just take a moment here as an aside to say that on the same download page where you were able to get this presentation, I also had another file called handouts.doc. That's just a set of examples there. I'm not really intending to go into those in this presentation. I wanted to give them to you to have samples, but within that handout file, I do have a sample message there that was taken off an MQQ with a browse program so that you could see an example of what one of those messages looks like. We go on to page 13. This goes into a little more detail about what I was just saying. The header at the beginning of that is just a typical MQMD. The format field within that header is going to be MQH-SAP. If the format field is not MQH-SAP, if the application puts a message with a different format, say he uses the default format, you're probably going to have the message end up on your bad message queue, which I'll get into a little more detail, saying that it's got a bad format. And then, as I also discussed, the link header has that control information, which MQLink uses to route the message. You'll see that it will start with an eye catcher. If you browse the message and look at the eye catcher portion, it's going to have an eye catcher of SAPH. That's how you can identify the start of that link header information or that control information. And then following that is the application data, which is made up of IDOCs. And usually the IDOCs are going to start with an eye catcher of something like EDI_DC40, for example. But those are predefined by the R3 link, by the R3 program itself. So those IDOCs will have eye catchers too, but those are prescribed by R3. We move on now to page 14. We're ready now to get into some of the troubleshooting information, where you go to find that information in case you had a problem. The first place you want to look is to see if you have any error messages. Now, there are different kinds of error messages. There are informational messages, warning messages, error messages, but they're all written to the same place. They're written to an smqerr01.log. Now, if you're familiar with the way MQSeries does his error messages, we write those messages to an amqerr01.log. This is a similar type deal where we write the messages to error01.log. Once smqerr01.log fills up, we copy that off to error02.log, and then we keep writing the most current messages into smqerr01.log. So your most current messages are always going to be in smqerr01.log, but once it fills up, we will write those off to O2 and O3. So we could have up to three logs out there. Now, I mentioned here on this particular page that there's a parameter called logging equal Y in your inbound INI file. This is an additional parameter that you may use to write out status messages. I have never had to personally use this gather information. They're typically there if you want to see more detail about the message flow and perhaps you wanted to actually get more detail about what messages are flow. So they're not really there for the purpose of an error, but more for the purpose of monitoring what's going on. So you may set that up sometime just as a monitoring situation, but you probably wouldn't need it to be set for just general running of the MQLink product. Move on now to page 15. The messages that are written to this log are all documented in the MQLink user's guide. It's in Appendix C. all the messages are going to start with the same prefix. They're going to start with SMQ. So, for example, if you look in that error log, you may see an SMQ 4101 says the MQ series link for R3 server has started. See, that's a message. It's not really an error situation, but it's a good indication. You can see the time when your server starts, and then, you know, if you have different iterations of the server, you can see each time when it starts in that log. Now, the messages in these logs are stored in the SMQ/bin/errors directory. It's going to be in a different location depending on which platform you have the product installed upon. The different directories are all documented in the user's guide. The example I give here, I believe, is for Solaris, but the other platforms will have similar type directories where it's the leading install directory /SMQ/bin/errors. We move on now to the next page, page 16. I'm going to talk now about the bad message queue. Now, I mentioned this a little earlier. If you're familiar with the concept of a dead letter queue in MQ series, this is a very similar thing. What happens is the inbound server will be taking messages off of an inbound queue, and if the inbound server comes upon a message that he can't handle because there's a problem with it, instead of shutting down the server and stopping right there, we provide the bad message queue for him to place that message that he can't handle onto this bad message queue. Now, there's a parameter within your inbound server INI file called terminate on bad message. If you say terminate on bad message equal no, that says do not terminate the server when you hit a bad message. Move that message off to the bad message queue if you can, and then continue on with the next message in the inbound server queue. Now, when we do that, the name of the queue that he's going to place it on, the bad message queue, is also another parameter that you specify in the inbound server INI file. We move on now to page 17. This page is going to give you a diagram of what the bad message structure looks like. When we place the message on this bad message queue, we're going to give you some information about why we had to place it there. And the way we do that is by placing a bad message header at the beginning of the message that we take off the inbound server's queue. Now, it's going to have, again, this is another MQ queue, so it's going to start with an MQMD header, as any message will. But then following that MQMD header, it's going to be a bad message header. And what I did here is took a page out of the user's guide, which breaks down that the different field names within the bad message itself. Now, I mentioned the handouts.doc. I give a couple of examples of messages which I browsed off of a bad message queue just to give you an example of what those messages would look like. But if you were to look at those, they'll have the information at the top where you browse the message, and it has the MQMD header. Then it's going to have the bad message header, and you'll see an eye catcher at the beginning of that bad message header that'll spell out BMH. The BMH is the indicator this is the start of the bad message header. From that position on, you'll have, as it breaks down here, the different field names, you'll have the first word will be that BMH blank, then the next field will be the version, then the error type, and then the real information that you want to take out of that is going to be the reason code. The reason code is going to tell you why we had to place that message on the bad message queue. All the reason codes are going to be in hexadecimal value, so you'll first have to convert it from hexadecimal into decimal. But then once you do that, if you look in the MQ link user's guide, it gives you all of the values for the different reason codes and an explanation of what that reason is. For example, one reason may be that the format was bad, or another reason may be that the IDOC had an improper length. But all those values are spelled out in the user's guide. I believe it's in chapter 10. We move on now to page 18. We're going to talk about the traces. The traces can be valuable information, especially if you don't see enough detail in the error messages or in the bad message queue to tell you what your problem is. And if that's the situation, then the first trace you're probably going to want to get is what I refer to as the SMQ trace, but this is actually the MQ leak trace. When the trace is activated, you're going to get a trace file for each instance of a server that's running. So typically most setups are going to have one outbound server running, one inbound server, and if you started the traces, it would produce one file for each of those servers. If you had multiple inbound servers or multiple outbound server instances running, you're going to get a different trace file for each one of those. Now, the trace file names are going to have a process number or a PID number in the name. And again, this is similar to the way MQ Series does its traces, where you have an AMQ process number.trc. In this case, it's going to be SMQ, the process number, which matches one of those inbound or outbound server processes, .trc. You go on to page 19, talk about here how to start the trace. The trace is started by setting an environment variable. The environment variable that you set is SMQ underscore trace equals some value. No matter what you specify in that value, it's the same result. If you specify SMQ trace equal on, equal off, equal monkey, whatever you want to specify there, it's going to have the net result of starting that trace. Now, the catch is you have to specify that environment variable before you start the server process. So you would specify the SMQ trace equal on and then start your inbound server or then start your outbound server. And at that point, a trace file would be generated for each process. The way you stop the trace is by setting SMQ trace equal null or blank. By uninitializing that value, you can effectively turn the trace off. Now, the trace is not going to be recognized until you stop the server and restart it again. But the next time you start the server with that trace value set to blank, it should not start a new trace for the next iteration of your server process. We go on now to page 20. There are some additional environment variables that you can set to control the trace. One is SMQ underscore XLAT underscore path. This allows you to have the trace go to a directory of your choosing. By default, the trace is going to go to the current working directory where you start the server process from. So whatever directory you start the server process from, by default, the trace will be written there. If you use this parameter, SMQ XLAT path, you can tell it to write the trace to a different directory. The SMQ underscore trace underscore level will allow you to set different detail levels on the information that's written to the trace. The default trace level is 2. Generally speaking, that's enough information to troubleshoot most problems. However, if you get into a problem where it gets into details of information passed between the server and MQ or R3, you may be asked to set that to a higher level. The highest level that you can set it to is 9+. If you set it to 9+, it's going to give you everything that trace is capable of writing out to that trace file. And again, there's some examples in the handouts.doc file of what one of those traces look like if you want to take a look at that. We move on now to page 22. I moved on to the wrong page here. Sorry. On page 21, RFC traces are another type of trace that you may use to gather information for problems. And these trace files are typically for intercommunication problems between the MQ Link program and R3. If you have problems establishing a connection when the server starts, this is the type of trace that usually would give you that information. It's going to show the flow of IDOCs between the MQ Link program and SAP R3. Whenever this trace is enabled, it's going to write a trace file called DEV underscore RSC. Now, one correction I have to make here is in my presentation, I say that this is started by setting an environment variable. I have to apologize, that's not the case. RSC trace equal on is actually specified in your INI files for the server. I accidentally put that it was an environment variable I was carrying on from the previous slides, I'm afraid, and missed that point when I set this up. So I apologize for that, but if you want to make that change manually, the trace is started by setting RFC trace on equal any value within your out.ini file or your in.ini file. And then similarly to the SMQ trace, you stop the trace by setting RFC trace on equal null or blanks. Again, this trace is going to be written to the current working directory of wherever you start your inbound or outbound server. And now if we move on to page 22, I list here the different environment variables that you can use. And we discussed the ones that you can use for the trace. The additional ones that I mentioned here are also documented in APARS and in the memo PTF file if you've applied any maintenance for, in particular, CSD2 or CSD3 for the product. It's documented there that you can set a parameter called IDOCS underscore limit or IDOCS underscore seconds. What these environment variables are is a way to cause the MQ link communication to R3 to disconnect and reconnect. And the reason you would want to do that is because at certain levels of the RFC code, there was a problem where there's a memory leak if connections were made and left to run for long periods of time. And the way that we allowed the MQ link users to get around this was we produced these environment variable settings, which allow you to cause the MQLink program to disconnect either after a set number of IDOCs are sent. If you set IDOCs limit equal to 50, for example, after every 50 IDOCs, MQLink would disconnect and start a new connection into RFC. If you chose to do it by time instead of by a number of IDOCs, you do IDOCS underscore seconds equal how many seconds you wanted to wait before he would disconnect and reconnect. The last environment variable on this screen or on this page is SMQ error log size. And this is just a way to allow you to increase the size of the SMQ error logs where we write out the error messages. By default, that file will grow up to 256,000 bytes, and then it'll move it into SMQ error02.log. If you wanted to make that larger, you can use this parameter to do so. Like I said, the default is 256,000. If you wanted that to be larger, you could set this to a larger value. And again, there's an APAR that describes that, and it's also documented in the memo PTF file with the CSD. And speaking of CSDs, as we move on to page 23, the maintenance for MQ Link is not available for download like, say, for example, the MQ Series CSD. You have to contact IBM support and ask for the CSD to be provided to you. And the reason for that is basically a CSD is a replacement for a great portion of the code. And if we just placed it out there for anyone to download, it would be a violation of certain restrictions and laws that we have on basically giving the product away. So to avoid that, you have to come through the support center and ask for the CSD if you need the maintenance. Currently, we're at CSD 03. That was released in October of 2005, and the current version is, of course, version 1.2. As of this time, there's been no announced plans to end support of version 1.2, and similarly, there's no announced plans to release a new version. So 1.2 is the current version. It's very stable. However, the CSD02 maintenance has been out there for quite a while, so there's several fixes included in CSD03. So if you don't have that, you might want to contact the support center and at least get a copy of it so you can look through the memo PTF file to see what fixes are included in there so that you can decide whether any of them would benefit you. Some of those fixes are going to be enhancements to the product as it exists now. So you may want to take a look through that to see what the different fixes are that are included in CSD03. We move on now to page 24. This is just in summary. This is what we've covered today. We covered the purpose of MQ-Link for R3 and the different components and how they all fit together. We talked a little bit about what the MQ-Link and the bad message queue messages will look, the headers look like for those messages. And then we talked about where to look for error messages, where to specify traces and how to get those traces in case you run into problems. And now if we move on to page 25, this page tells you a little bit or gives you a little more detail of where you can go to find more information about what we talked about here today. One place is the MQ Series Link for R3 Users Guide. It's a very good description. It goes into more detail actually than we covered here. It also describes all these parameters that I keep mentioning in the R3 Users Guide. And the URL for the online version of that manual is listed here. You can also get to a copy of the R3 Users Guide if you go to the page where you would normally go to find the WebSphere MQ manuals. On the right-hand side of that page, there's a link there that says MQ Series Link for R3, and you can click on that to go look at the user's guide also. Move on now to page 26. This is another reference. Some of the information in that handout doc file that I included along with this was taken from a support pack, MC07, called the MQ Series Link for R3 Configuration Guide. It has some examples of setup on both the SAP side as well as MQ and MQ Link. It was put together by one of the developers as he set up a system and just wanted to give you some more examples beyond what are provided in the user's guide. So if you wanted to see some examples of a working environment, this MC07 support pack is a good place to look. And again, some of the information in the handout doc file was taken from that support pack. And then if we move on to page 27, this is just a list of some additional WebSphere product resources that you might find useful, where you can go to learn more about other webcasts and other information on not only MQ R3 Link, but other products that may be of interest to you. So that concludes my discussion portion of the presentation. So now at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Steve to open up the lines for questions if we have any.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. Please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 for questions or comments, and we'll pause just a moment to give everyone a chance to signal. And we'll go first to Stephen Matthew.
Hi, yeah. We're trying to do MQ into SAP, and we're trying to do load balancing. what happens when we turn load balance on, everything falls into the error queue. But we're not really sure why it's doing that. And I know you mentioned today about the error queue. How can we go in to see what these errors are so we can rectify this?
Well, if you have the sample MQ Series browse program, that AMQSBCG, you can browse the messages on that queue. And then if you look at the layout that I described here, it'll have the bad message header in there. And then at the fourth word in there will be a reason code to explain why those messages are going there. If you have problems breaking that down, I would suggest opening a problem record, and we'll be glad to work through that with you and give you more details on what the specific reason is. But we would really need to break down that, you know, browse that message, break down the message to get the reason code out of it, and then we can see why the messages are going to that bad message queue.
When you say open a problem record, we can just go in to where to do that?
There's a ESR, electronic service request. If you look on that last slide of the presentation, it gives you information about where you can learn more about ESR requests. That'll let you submit a electronic problem record to the support team.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
And as a reminder, press star 1 on your touchtone phone for questions or comments. Again, we'll pause just a moment. And having no further questions in the queue, I'd like to turn the conference over to Dick Hamilton for any additional or closing comments.
Hello, yes. At this time, we'd like to conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. Remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the IBM WebSphere Technical Exchange site within the next day or two. We hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Greg, for presenting.
And this does conclude today's program. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.